Welcome to BridgeEd, the podcast brought to you by The Bridge here at Wellington College, where we'll be joined by a series of interesting guests to explore some of the most topical issues in the education sector.
So, hello, Evan Butmer. I'm very happy to be speaking with you this afternoon. You were the first author of an article published in the Bridge Journal of Educational Research and Theory. And it's full of some very interesting ideas about leadership, about virtue-based ethics, about human flourishing, something I know that you've worked on various projects with one of our colleagues here, Katie Granville Chapman. So tell us about the work that is behind the scenes in this very thought-provoking article.
Oh, thank you so much, Karen. It's wonderful to be here and a real privilege to be the first article that was printed in The Bridge. It was wonderful when Katie connected us both. And an exciting piece. I was so excited when it came out. As you know, of course, it was a reprint from an article that originally appeared in the Journal of Character and Leadership Development as a program and intervention piece. In the piece, we're introducing our basic approach to leadership education at Culver Academies, in particular in the kind of taught side of things. If you're there's in some of this work in character education, the Jubilee Center at University of Birmingham, they have this really helpful phraseology of character and leadership are taught, caught, and sought. And in particular, in this article, we're talking about that taught component. At Culver Academies, we have a four-year sequence of leadership education experiences that happen in classrooms in a taught sequence. In addition to that, it's a boarding school. So we have all sorts of experiences for young people to be kind of catching character and seeking it out themselves through service or other kind of service or opportunities, all sorts of extracurricular opportunities. But in particular, in that article, we're talking about our taught philosophy. And as you shared, we are a department that has a foundation in virtue ethics. That's something actually that the institution itself has. Culver Academies is very, I think, pretty amazing for me getting to work there, is that we have kind of a focus in virtues and values, central even to our campus. And in bronze, we have our virtues and values are actually enshrined in bronze in the center of the campus. But then also in the mission of the school, we have cultivation of character as something that is central to the institution. And so then one of the powerful things is that part of what I describe in that article is a little bit of the history of our department. It goes all the way back to 1986, where there is a recognized need for formal instruction in character and leadership. One of the things that comes up quite a bit in leadership studies, there's actually a great article for a couple of years ago called that talks about zombie leadership, which is that there are certain kind of misconceptions about leadership that come up over and over and over again, even after they've been disproven over and over and over again in the research. These are things, for example, like the myth of like the effectiveness of the command and control leader, or someone who dominates and belittles and has things that are, these are genuinely just biases that many of us have, often from popular culture or also various shows of leadership that we see in the political sphere as well, that is very detached from actually the work of leadership every day. And so I think part of the recognition in 1986 was that there needed to be some formal instruction in contemporary leadership studies and understanding what the research has said in, say, the last, at that point, probably maybe 60 years or so of kind of formal study of leadership and character. But now getting close to about 100 years of really trying to understand with contemporary methods, like what's happening in the leadership phenomenon. And I've just been so excited. It's been my eighth year at Culver. part of what was great coming out with my dean of faculty at the time, or he's still my dean of faculty, but this real energy and excitement to continue to add research basis to what we're doing with young people. And so we've drawn in all sorts of ways from work happening in contemporary leadership studies and in the character education space they shared already with the Jubilee Center, but also Michael Lamb at the Wake Forest Program for Character and Leadership and the Oxford Character Project have this amazing framework of what are called the 7 strategies. We draw on that a lot too, helping young people to start thinking about what are evidence-based strategies for developing their leadership and character. And it can maybe be a little bit different than what some of those zombie leadership ideas are. So instead of like, it's things like, for example, focus on practice and on character and focus on reflection and focus on role models and exemplars and friendships and setting goals and intentions for how we become better people, that we start to lead more from kind of our intrinsic sense of what's right, and ultimately, in a sense, actually leading from values that we share with others, not just our sense of, you know, my way or the highway, but actually seeing what the common shared values are and seeing what we can lead each other toward that's beyond just an extrinsic reward or, you know, of course, the carrot and stick idea.
In a second, because I think it's really interesting. But if you let me, I'm even going to go back a little bit further, because
yes, of course,
there's so much that's really unusual, it seems, in this program that you have, and because I don't know personally of any other institution with a 4-year sequence of formal instruction in character development and leadership. And that's, it seems to me, quite exceptional. And the fact that you are looking for not only instructors, but also students to be aware of research that supports ways of thinking and being is also, I think, rather unusual. We focus often on the gap between research and practice with teachers and don't always carry it on to the experience of students. And now we're here with the Bridge and with the journal, this bringing these worlds together and expanding that conversation is you know, one of our aims. But you also said something about the relationship of someone who's leading to those around them. So one of the other notions in the article that I found really fascinating is about the co-constructed relationship between leaders and followers. And I think, as you were suggesting, that is quite different from your average understanding of leaders and followers. And I'd really like to hear more about that. And the ways in which, at least as you're speaking, I'm thinking about the importance of someone being, demonstrating, living their authentic self.
Oh my gosh, amazing. So many awesome things to pick up on, Karen. So I'll say, like, please feel free to continue to stop me and also just like pick up on the things where I haven't kind of covered or engage with some of the things you bring up, because, oh my gosh, some of the things you brought up at the beginning were just so wonderful too. But on that idea of the co-constructed process, that's something that I do draw from the research. And in particular, it comes out of, as you see, another part of the article is thinking, say, for the last almost, you know, last 40 years or so, in what's called transformational leadership theory. There's a scholar that we have kind of drawn from again and again at Culver, and we're not, you know, unique to do this, but I think in many ways, I hope actually maybe I can be a little bit of a voice to say, like, wow, there is so much to draw from this person. And I think in so many ways we can continue to have some of his work kind of serve as a North Star for a lot of our work in character and leadership education broadly, not just at Culver. But he was actually a presidential historian. He made his name by being a pretty remarkable presidential biographer, James McGregor Burns. And he also started to get very interested, though, just in a generalized theory of leadership. And in 1978, he writes this book aptly titled Just Leadership. And in it, he really sets the tone for probably the last 40 years or so of contemporary leadership studies. In particular, he distinguishes between two basic styles of leadership, transformational leadership, which is based on what he calls his actual definition for it is transformational leadership occurs when leaders and their followers raise one another to higher levels of motivation and morality, which is pretty remarkable. And I think in a sense, he's actually keying into something pretty special, though, is that the kinds of leaders who motivated us beyond just whatever the system of, you know, rewards and punishments is that they kind of keyed us into. We come into institutions all the time, say, where we're kind of told, well, here are the things where you'll be rewarded, and here are the things where there's going to be some challenges. But transformational style leaders do something different. They raise you to a new level of motivation beyond just that, you know, you're going to get a reward. Often there's actually not a clear extrinsic reward that's offered. It's something actually deeper and more connected to some kind of universal principle of so things that kind of like say might motivate teachers. It's like I want to help my young people flourish, or I want to help them learn something important that's going to help them in the future, or that I care about people. I mean, it's something much deeper. And then also he has this idea of that they actually help us become a better person. It's a little bit interesting in how he actually cashes that out. He actually uses examples of someone like a Martin Luther King or a Gandhi who are motivating using ethics. He's struck by how often these individuals, they're not holding, fear over you of that they're going to punish you. They get millions of people to do something based on a sense of like basic principles of justice and love and.
So in addition,
Sorry,
interrupting. In addition to some sort of shared moral vision, is it also about empowering others?
Yes, absolutely. So this is what's just absolutely amazing with Burns is that on the one hand, he talks about these amazing social political leaders who have brought about great change, but what he tries to make really clear is that he thinks these transforming style leaders are all around us. They actually, he calls them they electrify the system and they incorporate everyone in the work of leadership. Even that definition is so interesting. Leaders and followers raise one another to higher levels of motivation and morality. It's bidirectional. Things are happening between the leaders and followers. Interestingly, at all sorts of points in a later book in 2003, he writes a kind of a follow-up book called Transforming Leadership. And he actually at various points says it's almost like I love talking about the word leadership because leadership is he calls it the X factor. It's this electric power that goes throughout an entire system of human beings. He's like, I don't love talking about leaders and followers. Because he thinks then actually the causality is so quickly our biases about leadership make us think about leaders going down to followers, right? That's why he actually loves talking about leadership and that he thinks it's something special. And as I said, he uses this metaphor all the time of this electric power. And so I think actually, go ahead, yeah.
Doesn't make you think that maybe there should be a different term for it. I find it really fascinating because as you're talking about this, what I find in a way appealing, and this comes a bit from my own sort of Quaker background, is that it's challenging hierarchy. It's challenging hierarchical thinking, and maybe offering a more nuanced understanding of power dynamics, which is not necessarily a negative thing, nor is it necessarily a top-down thing.
I think your term of empowering is so powerful. Something that I think is really remarkable about Burns as well is that he says And it's interesting. He actually, again, he puts it in all sorts of different experiences and research he's done. He, on the one hand, as I said, makes his name as a presidential historian of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. That's kind of his scholarly claim to fame. And yet he talks about, for example, his experiences, this amazing interview he did with the University of Richmond Jepson School for Leadership Studies, where he talks about his experiences actually being a military historian during the Second World War. And he talked about actually his experiences in combat, and he was struck by all of those hierarchical kind of relationships, how quickly they fade away when a team is trying to achieve something together. That he says at one point, it's like, yeah, in the books you're always reading about like these, the generals and the majors and all this kind of thing. And of course they, in a sense, they have their role in operationalizing what's going to happen. But he was struck by actually in trying to achieve any particular thing that the highly, what he viewed as the transforming style leaders were, they did not just order people around. They brought them into the work that they were going to do together. They listened. They thought about, how are we going to do this? Like, well, let's see, maybe if this person maybe goes here, how could I support you? Oh my gosh, this person is not feeling well today. They're sick today. So this doesn't make sense. Like, they were so engaged in so many ways in whatever the shared goal was, that he says many times that these distinctions of kind of leader and follower fade away. And so I think there's this way in which, so sometimes even we often use the language of like team leader, team member. It's leader followers used so much in the scholarship. And in a sense, we also think it's important to share with students some of that language, so that they, it's the kind of thing that they might, you know, experience in the scholarship or also just in their lives. But I completely agree with you, and I will share, I have similar biases in that, like, I think challenging the hierarchy is pretty powerful. And I think what's really interesting is to get young people thinking about these kinds of styles of leaders, because on the one hand, they will have experienced all sorts of transactional leadership. They will have experienced all sorts of people who have tried to motivate them solely through rewards and punishments. And what's amazing, as I said, is that I think Burns gives us such a powerful language for thinking about a different style of more intrinsically motivated leader, that they start thinking like, oh yeah, you know what? I had a baseball coach, and that coach, they weren't just interested in me for my hitting, or they weren't just interested in helping me throw more strikes or to score more goals in soccer or whatever. They cared about me as a person. They wanted me to be better. They cared about who I become. And it's amazing. It's truly, I think, remarkable for them. They have already had plenty of experiences by the time that they're 16, 17, when they're in this class, that they can start to, in this particular class, I'm in a sense referencing a little bit more the ethics course, our 11th grade course, they can start really thinking about who has had a more transformational impact and is a more transformational style leader. And I think what draws them in so much is that those people, they want you to be more like a leader yourself. This is another thing that Burns thinks is so, it's really amazing. He says that for that electrical metaphor, it's both so empowering, but he thinks in a good way, it's also destabilizing. It makes it so that things are so dynamic, because he said truly transformational leaders, they are not uncomfortable with making more leaders. They want more people to be involved. And so he uses, again, actually the example of, say, things happening in the U.S. civil rights movement. If you think about that electric power, think about all the people who get involved. We have sometimes that saint view, or it's just talking about Martin Luther King. Oh my gosh, think about millions of people got involved in this movement. And for the kinds of transformation to happen that Burns is interested in, it takes, in a sense, giving up that.
It's interesting that you say giving up, because as you're speaking, I'm thinking of this sort of leadership as gift.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But also, it it makes me think about culture.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're working collectively toward some shared goal, if you will, there is a culture associated with the collective.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to what degree is that something that you would address with students? Or even the ways in which one might draw on a change management theories in order to build a stronger collective that can then be effective in moving forward?
Yeah, amazing questions again. As you might imagine, there's especially working with young people, there's kind of we want to work from their experiences so much. We want to help them understand how they come into this conversation and then think about how they might continue to both expand their research horizons, but then also impact their practice. So one thing that's really, really key in our program is that if they're learning about, say, leadership theory or character theory or anything like this, or virtue ethics, we have a focus on that they put it into practice one way or another. So actually, in part of what I talk about in the article, in the 11th grade course, which happens for 16 to 17 year olds, for anything they're learning about transformational leadership or in just their focus on virtue and character development, we use the VIA strengths system for kind of having a common language of character. They set a goal and intention every week for how am I going to improve in this particular virtue? And how does it actually connect to my teams and communities here at Culver? And then they reflect at the end of every week to think about how did it go? Like, what were things that were good? What were things that were challenging? And they have a little kind of accountability buddy. And so this helps them just make connections between their lived experiences at Culver and then also what they're learning. I say all this because, say, for example, something like change management theory, that could be something that would be really interesting for some of our students. It might start to go a little beyond maybe where some of our students are as far as like what they're able to kind of, the level of abstraction that maybe they're able to do at that age. And so one of the things that's really powerful about our curriculum is by being a separate academic department with its own kind of curricular goals and what we're trying to achieve, we also have a kind of senior capstone experience called the Honors in Leadership Seminar that I also teach. That's also described in the article. And so the reason change management was just really interesting to me, I actually had several projects in that, and that's an independent project in leadership studies that a student develops. And they actually kind of almost do like a mini dissertation defense in front of the Department of Leadership Education where they present out their research and what they found. They can do a kind of more historical biographical case study model, or they can actually do something more empirical and kind of like social science. And we have had students who are really interested in that kind of something kind of fundamental to the transformational leadership model is in one way or another, like change management. It's very interesting because actually there's another important figure in leadership studies, John Cotter, who famously distinguishes between leadership and management and thinks that in a sense that leadership is about vision and change and moving things forward to some kind of future that we want, and management is about basasically keeping things on the rails and making things go
operational.
Exactly. It's operational. Exactly. So it's very interesting because many of our students are they kind of are in that kind of interesting space where they're balancing both like leadership and management. Because one of the things that's also very unique for all the ways in which I'm talking about the taught components of our school, and that like we are like the kind of formal education in leadership, students have amazing opportunities to practice and learn through, as a boarding school, we have a very robust student life curriculum as well. And they have leadership positions and they try things out and they try things out in a committee and they see what works and doesn't work and they have an initiative that falls through or they have an initiative that goes great, you know? And so they actually get a lot of kind of management experience in that way too, of like trying to actually bring some of these bigger, ideas.
Can bridge what they have learned theoretically or conceptually in class with what they're doing. That's really exceptional. I'm looking at time passing and it passes so quickly. And this is such an interesting conversation, but I don't want to end it without giving you the opportunity to talk a little bit about your upcoming publication. Congratulations for that.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I have a book coming out with Edward Elgar, a wonderful publisher, and they have what's called the Jepson series in leadership studies. I believe I have the name right there. Jepson Studies in Leadership. That's what it is. It's a really exciting book series. It's been going on for over a decade, and it was originally with a different publisher and then moved over. Anyway, all to say, yes, I have a book coming out on May 28th. It is called Cicero's New Leadership, a Proto-Transformational Leadership Theory, which is great. We've been talking a lot of transformational leadership. I think one thing that struck me, my PhD is in ancient philosophy, is I came into teaching at Culver and learning a lot about leadership studies quickly and engaging with it with students. I was struck in so many ways in which some things happening in contemporary leadership studies are so, so connected maybe with some like ancient ideas about how we lead and how to best lead. In a sense, this goes all the way back to someone like a Plato talking about like, what would it look like to have philosopher rulers? What would it look like to have people who are more intrinsically motivated in their leadership, as opposed to that they want just power and fame, that they actually want the good of the city. It comes up a lot in the Confucian tradition as well. What would it be like to have virtuous leaders? And not just like, what would it be like, but that actually that is the right model. I was very struck by that. That's very much like in Confucian, and then like Meng Tse, a later follower of Confucius. I was really struck by this. Like, no, that actually is the best way to lead, is to model the virtues and model what you say and actually try to bring about change for the right reasons. And I think I've always been quite partial to that, for all the ways in which our current political leaders can fail that test in so many ways. And not just political leaders, but like leaders in all sorts of different arenas. So it's all to say, my PhD was in Cicero's moral and political philosophy. And I was so struck by his basic vision of and a kind of ideal leader is what we had shared a little bit before we, you know, jumped on this call, was this idea of authentic transformational leadership. And like, what is this idea? So I've talked about transformational leadership, and there's this really interesting idea from Bernard Bass, Paul Stottlemyre. They are kind of followers of Burns, I guess we should say. And they make a distinction between authentic transformational leadership and pseudo-transformational leadership. And authentic transformational leadership is when someone genuinely models the virtues and cares about the values that they say they care about. And they, in a sense, have like a selfless concern for the collective or where we're going together. So that would be like, again, to use Burns' examples, that's someone like a Martin Luther King or a Gandhi. And then on the other hand, there's a pseudo-transformational leader who uses tools of persuasion, and they motivate in this way that in a sense is maybe a little bit less clearly transactional. But they're this is actually funny. Burns, I mean, not funny, it's actually absolutely key and critical. Burns says that leadership will always be deeply concerned with ethics, and that like to distinguish between the authentic transformational and the pseudo transformational, like his example par excellence of pseudo transformational leadership is Adolf Hitler. Someone who uses all of these tools of motivation and makes you in one way or another feel like you're involved and you're connected to something outside of yourself, which is this, you know, this all-encompassing vision of the racial hierarchy of Nazi Germany. But that this is how important it is, actually, that we get this right, that there's authentic transformational leadership and there's pseudo transformational leadership. It's just, and that great Greek term pseudo, pseudos, the lie, it's not real, it's a sham, right? So it's all to say, I think Cicero, he's striking in that there's this work that I draw from in particular, the De Republica, which is based on Plato's Republic, actually. And he talks about his ideal leaders are people who exhibit virtues like courage and justice and moderation, and humanity and mercy. And that these individuals they really do think about the good of the collective, and it is not about their own project of glory. I think
if we could, go ahead.
If we could see more often the living of virtues that are clearly defined, and if we could see more often placing the other before oneself, we'd might not be in such a mess.
Yes,
as we currently find ourselves everywhere.
Yes, I completely agree, and I think it's certainly something that's a real privilege to be able to talk to young people about where we're going and what this future looks like for us. I think what I'm always struck by is that so often I think Cicero is an amazing guide for this, is that he thinks it's just, this also just so beautifully connects with contemporary leadership studies, is that in Cicero's mind, a truly good leader has to be both ethical and effective. Once you make the sacrifice of start thinking that leadership is all about just getting things done and being effective, you've lost your North Star on where we're going. Why do we do any of the things we do? And he, so his later book on duties, the De Officiis, the entire third book is just exploring like what can go wrong when you start to just think that it's about getting things done. It's just
about, that was a book that I used to teach to students.
Yeah.
On political and philosophical thought. So yes. It speaks to me.
Yeah,
wonderful. Oh, exactly. And so I think what the ways in which we can get young people to really, really think about those trade-offs and those challenges, and also too that they think about exemplars, as you said, they need to see exemplars. And the research shows that they need to have both the extraordinary exemplar that's maybe in a past time, like someone, let's just again, someone like a Martin Luther King, but they need people today too. And to get them even thinking about who are people that they appreciate and admire, who bring out certain virtues that they care about. If you care about justice, someone who models that, who models like connection to fairness and trying to make this world better. Who's someone that you think of as courageous, and where do you see that they do these amazing things and that they're courageous? Where do you see true love in other people, and how do they bring that out? And then how do they do that in leadership? What does that look like? And I think, like I said, I love that idea of Cicero's, that these virtues are not just, you know, relegated to the personal sphere, that there's a way to show these virtues in public life. And he knows there's that retort coming from the cynical, person who thinks it's all just like, you know, power plays and everything. And he says, at what cost, or what are you willing to give up if you don't think that leadership is about being both ethically good and effective? So,
well, you're doing some amazing work with young people, and I think we should trust in the young also.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And I think maybe we will unfortunately have to stop on that note. But it doesn't mean that we may not renew a conversation on another occasion. Yeah. And I thank you for your time, and I've really enjoyed this, and wish you all the best for this new book, which sounds really wonderful.
Well, thank you so much, Karen, and all the best to the Bridge and all the best to the publication. And it's just really exciting. And Wellington has been a wonderful connection for me the last couple of years. And I'm excited to see what you all continue to do.
Thank you. And talk to you again.
Please leave a comment, ask a question, and like, follow, and subscribe to hear more from Bridge Ed. You can also follow The Bridge on LinkedIn, and you can find out more information on our website at thebridge.wellingtoncollege.org.uk. Until next time.